Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
A choice right now, between fear and love. It's just a rock.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expounding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's very profound.
Very.
Expanding reality.
Welcome to Expanding Reality. I am your host, Brandon Thomas. On this incredibly cool episode, Devin Winter comes by to talk about the particularities of this ridiculous realm that we live in. Now, Devin is a 23-year-old self-taught theoretical physicist. He speaks all about 3D time navigation, his dematerialization from his own body, as well as extraterrestrial entity encounters from Vedic beings and archons and all kinds of stuff, guys. Now, he does have a phenomenal visual presentation that he has worked up here, so make sure you guys check the video version in the show description. Also down there is the way to join the Afterthought, where we go balls deep into the information hazards and the hazardous information out there. Absolutely fascinating conversation. Wonderful way to support your favorite show. It is the link down there that reads Patreon. That's also where we're hosting the hangouts and all kinds of stuff, guys. So again, link down in the show description for the Afterthought and all the bonus content. But for now, and without any further ado, Devin Winter. Devin Winter, welcome to the show, my friend. I want to, of course, invite you to introduce yourself for the audience here, after I remind them that all the ways to find you will be located down in the show description. He's got his email as well as his Instagram down there, and this dude is awesome. So, if you don't mind, my friend, tell us a little bit about yourself in your own words.
Well, over the years, I've started getting into metaphysics, and which then branched over to theoretical physics and applicable physics and health and mathematics, and pretty much just started wanting to learn about how everything works in the most abstract, fundamental level, how it could, and that started inducing some very weird spiritual experiences.
Yeah. You've had a bunch of amazing things happen, and we're going to talk about this. You're a 23-year-old self-taught theoretical physicist, dude. I mean, you're just out there autodidacting the shit out of life, and we love that, man. I mean, if you know, I love that line in Tomorrowland when the lady's like, "Why'd you make this jetpack?" He was like, "I just got tired of waiting around for somebody else to do it for me." And that seems like your motto, man, in life. And you just like have that woven through your DNA. And it's fascinating, man. I met you actually on a Zed talk that our buddy Evan Howell, shout out Evan, invited me to join. And you guys do these things all the time with Polymath is there and a bunch of fascinating minds. This is like next level think tank shit. And we were on that. Mary and I were on one of them, and you came up and you had this model, dude. And so actually, let's just kick it off with that. We're going to talk about a bunch of cool shit, but I want to let the audio-only audience know that the video version of this is located down in the show description, as well as the Patreon, where you can join us for the Afterthought, and it's a great way to support your show, your favorite show here, all of our shows. And so all that located down in the show description, dude. So this damn thing that you made, you created this thing. I'm not going to set it up other than we saw you talk about this in a Zed talk. So please, sir, if you don't mind, break it off for us, dude. Tell us about this thing.
Yeah, I'll get describing and then I'll bring up the visual of it. Perfect. So it is a rough model of 3D time, not necessarily technically accurate, but applicably accurate, very useful in practice. Because there's a unified physics model that I've been reading over that was published back in the 70s by Dewey B. Larson. It's three volumes in it. pretty much shit on by everything mainstream. I actually got banned from a couple subreddits because I just asked about it, which is pretty funny. But in his model, what he has is, so light speed is, well, it's useful but not technically accurate. However, what we regard as light speed is the unity field or the unity boundary. It's the boundary between 3D space and 3D time. And so the way that I'm viewing them all roughly, well, there's a couple attributes. When you're inside 3D space, which we're in right now, you can move through space freely. When you move beyond the boundary, then you move into 3D time, where you can navigate, right, 3D frames of space as freely as you can navigate 3D space.
Wow.
And so
It's that right there. It's that mind-blowing shit, dude, where you drop it on us. Because this means that if you're going faster than the speed of light, which seems to be this physical speed limit to the physical reality, right? Then this means that you can transcend that and then go visit other places. Is this what you're talking about? Or go visit other times in this place?
Times in this place, because there seems to be multiple boundaries. The one I'm coming across right now is, it looks like whenever you're in 3D space or 3D time, which try to be like sub-unity or above unity or light speed, you're still moving in Planck units. So you're not moving small in the Planck yet. You're moving inside of those units. It's just moving beyond the threshold, but like an interval multiple of that base fundamental frequencies, the resolution, basically. If you actually want to move into different multiverses, because the thing I'm trying to figure out is like dimensions/densities, like the layers are stacked on top of us. I'm not sure where the math is for that, but to move to different multiverses, you have to shift the fundamental resolution, basically.
Okay, got it. So it's a different frequency altogether, even though it's maybe the same speed. So let's say the same speed, you go, let's say light speed, but you're at a different frequency or resonant something, or you hit a different angle in space.
It could be something along those lines. Basically, like if you just imagine like there's a universal refresh rate, right? Let's just give it 100 units for easy math.
Okay.
Then we over here, we're refreshing once or 100 times a second, roughly speaking. Perhaps in these other ones, they're also refreshing 100 times a second, but rather than doing it at second 0.0, they might be doing it at second 0.01.
Dude, their unit of time might be different. Yeah.
Yeah, or with the start of their frequency is a slightly different position than our start of frequency. So we may all be on the same frequency, but a slightly different starting position.
Oh, but this makes you think then that eventually they'll all sync up, sort of like those metronomes. When you put them all together in a room, right, eventually they all, so even though they've ticked at this different rate, you set them all differently, they will all kind of eventually go with this syncopated rhythm.
Yeah, well, aren't you just kind of describing like negentropy or a like tendency towards perfection or ascension?
There you go. And then, so it balances for a moment, though, and then, of course, it goes back to entropy, right? It goes chaotic. Is this just the way of things, do you think?
Well, the whole entropy, negentropy things are, I don't know if those terminologies are accurate, per se. And I said I want to stay away from things I don't have my head fully wrapped around yet.
Fair enough.
Because especially with observing our reality as things, there's been so many entities that have fucked with our universe for the last, 500 million years, that we don't really know how things are supposed to be. We know that they're supposed to be a lot more pleasant than we experience them, but I don't know to what degree. I don't know to what degree the disharmony naturally generates without free will intervention.
Mm. We're going to talk about this. We have so much to talk about. Okay, please, sir. Do you have your model here, or did you have any more setup with it? Because, is one of the most interesting things. It helped me visualize this concept of shifting dimensions. And even the manifestation spirituality click, that kind of crew, this is going to be helpful with this because it's a visual model that he has made in Minecraft because he's a young man utilizing the resources he's skilled at. I love this, dude. Because this is, again, this caught our eye. Mary and I, we didn't even see your face, honestly, the entire meeting. We saw this. And I was like, who are you? I sent you my thing. We emailed, here we are. So, guys, again, check the video version in the show description if you're able at this moment. If not, catch it later, whatever. It'll be down there. But please, Devin.
Yeah, so one of the things I really like about this, as you reference, is how easily it plugs into manifestation. And then starts to explain like the difference between timelines and worldlines, which I think is a very big oversight that a lot of these thinkers seem to have is they seem to integrate the two ideas. One of the most intuitive ways to like model how timelines work is it's just memory. It's memory of your consciousness route. And so your consciousness, your soul's manifestation might choose any route it wants to across a plethora of world lines. And so even if you're moving from world line A, B, C, all the way to Z, that's your timeline because you transition across all of those. And so that can be explanation for some minor like personal Mandela effects, for example.
Damn. Yes, 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 yes. And we, my wife and I were talking the other day about Mandela effects being sort of your personal indicator that you have not necessarily leveled up, but that you're expanding and that you're obviously not in the same space. And that obvious, and then also it gives you this clue that reality is very flexible and pliable, but the way that it's navigable is what you brought to the forefront with us. It was because we're sitting here going all these imaginary concepts and shifting and new dimensions and, you know, higher versions of reality and everything. And this is what's so fascinating about your model. You can picture the world we live in now in any of these boxes. Well, let's say the red box, right? The floor. I'm gonna let you explain this, I promise. But when you, whenever you look at it this way and you say that time, as you move through this, is what it is, it's frames of time caught, then that's what's fascinating about this. Because then you think, well, of course I shifted to a place where there's no dash between kit and cat because I'm not in that reality anymore, but it's an indicator. I think it's like missing time in the extraterrestrial phenomena or whatever. I feel it's an indicator of something really fantastic that you're doing.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think there's a few different types of Mandela effects because, like, for one, on what you're referencing, where it's your navigation through the time matrix, I've noticed I've had a handful of people which seem to have better recollection of more Mandela effects the more spiritually centered they are. And this also plugs into a couple of things, but it's basically your emotional coherency because you're able to carry more of yourself across the physical manifestations of your consciousness, which is your body and your memories, your local frame memories. But then there's also stories. There's an Instagram reel that one of my good friends sent me a while back where it was Sinbad on a live stream, and he was talking about the Shazam video, how there were VHS tapes of it actually existing. And what he talks about is how the CIA and these other deep state organizations is actually, sometimes they physically infiltrate people's locations if they have some of the more prized Mandela effects media, such as this, the Shazam VHSs. But they also at times use this, you know, sci-fi level transporters, quantum entanglement tech, where they'll physically alter the encoded data and the physical manifests.
That's so crazy.
So whether it's removing the tail from Curious George or changing the spelling of Bernstein Bears or the Monarch or you name it. Funny about this is I wanted to screen record. I didn't think about it until like 2 days later, the Instagram reel was deleted because it violates community guidelines.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Things like that tend to, you know, but it's interesting because if it is something that they can quantum do into past physical things. And I've heard Steve Falconer was talking about this with me, I think. And we were talking about how things physically change in books from the 1800s, like the text will be different. And so, yes, this is an indicator that this reality is malleable, but maybe it's not necessarily some sort of overarching govern me harder daddy technology, but perhaps that the realm is just really like that. And I think that the government would like to take credit for as much freaky woo-woo as it can. So it thinks, it makes you think that it's got all these insights into things. But also, I think this realm is just fucking weird, man. And sometimes, like, shit just happens. But that altering of text and things like this, because then I think about Disney, right? They're pretty tight with the lizard turds, I would say. And they paid, allegedly, a bunch of animators over 60-something million dollars to go back into old films, animations, and things like this and add chemtrails in them, so that we would sort of be psychologically conditioned to think that that was just always here and that it was okay and whatever. So again, this is one of these folklore things you look at, but it's a legitimate thing that happened. So if they could do that, why wouldn't they just add the things and not spend the money? You know what I mean? Why would Disney not utilize the tech and they're just fucking with people on an individual level is the question I would ask.
Well, it's always like when you're working at this stuff that isn't possible per their own words, they always want to minimize the public viewing of it as much as possible. So there's alternative, more mainstream methods are always going to do that, especially because, you know, when you're at this high level of weak status with these corporations is money is what they synthesize. So it doesn't matter. And I want to clarify with the Mandela effect. So let's just say some of them are governmentally induced. I think that's only some of them, not all of them by any means. And so just like,
that's brilliant too, because they'll slip it into a natural phenomena, sort of, you know, infiltrate with a couple of their own. And then what's to say who's like, what's to say what's going on everywhere?
Mm-hmm. And the reason why you were going to do that is because then if you, you know, over the last 120 years, as they've done, if you start talking about the fragility and inaccuracy of the human memory, and you start decoupling it more and more from the memories, then you start having people trust themselves less and less, because you're also gaslighting them, telling them that, you know, this never happened and their memory doesn't work.
Dude, what a game, right? I mean, damn. Okay, dude, that is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, and also like with the altering of the text is our reality, like it refreshes, it rebuilds itself at least every point, maybe more than that, because there's talks about the turning wave. And I've just heard a little bit about that, but it's like I think 1/2000th the size of Planck. But that may be embedded in that unity field that I was talking about, the membrane barrier. There seems to be a lot to that, but I don't have my head fully wrapped around this one thing as a mention. However, because our reality is refreshing every Planck unit, and like for people that don't know, the Planck unit is basically the smallest unit that can exist in our time. It's the where you go like Planck length, it's the actual physical length of a photon, or the Planck distance, or Planck time, is the amount of time that a photon takes to travel one photon length.
And then because like every... How can that be quantified, man? That's fast.
It was how Max Planck derived it is he postulated that every element would be oscillating a whole number multiple of a fundamental frequency, which turned out to be correct. And so they were able to observe the atoms and molecules' oscillation rate, and then they were able to derive Planck's constant too. So it does have a margin of error, I think, by like an obscenely small number. It's like 0.00006 to the power of 10 to the to the power of 10 negative 44 or something like that.
I'm glad I asked. I knew you'd know. That's fascinating.
And then like because it's interesting in the Wilsonian physics model as well, is he derives atoms as being fundamentally photons, which are then have a rotational motion applied to them inherently, and so then all atoms are made of photons just with additional motion.
Damn. Is the motion what gives them mass, which makes them visible and then dense it? And then
because he quantifies these motions, they're additive into scalar quantities from the unity field. And so how he builds his model is all these motions are a net displacement from the unity field. And so what we regard as a low frequency is actually a high displacement from the light field.
Damn, what a fascinating way to think about this, because it's all music, right? At a level, mm-hmm. And you do work with music as well. That's so interesting, dude.
Yeah, and so onto this model, so we can get off the screen share pretty soon here, at least what people think about a little bit more. There's a couple of things on it, like in reference to retaining memory across worldwide traversal, what seems to be a case, and it's also explanatory for intuition and ability to manifest, it seems like you can just imagine this as a 2D piece of grid paper. I just wanted to have a visual so you kind of reference the bookshelf scene in Interstellar, very similar to that. But your consciousness expands well beyond the physical manifest. So you can just say, you know, like say it's over here and, you know, space-time frame E5. You might also, your consciousness, you know, your physical manifest is only E5, your consciousness is spherical and expands across multiple coordinate points. And so it may be across E6, E7, E4, E3, and you know, backwards is obviously what your memory is. But then you can also start, because it's spherical, it starts to expand into the other world ones. And so this is, so when your intuition flares up, it's basically your consciousness running an algorithmic probability check on where the collective consciousness is going to navigate in 3D time. Whew. And there's a lot more to this too that it's been tricky workout because I've been pacing myself with this model because I want to make sure I can fully like navigate it emotionally rather than like just trying to throw things together that make sense. I want to make sure it registers with intuition well. But it seems to me that, you know, these number placements and the world line is arbitrary. Like we regard this as forward and backwards in time, but that's completely arbitrary because it's just our experience of it. Because everything seems to be more so bundled, and when you enter, it actually expands into what we regard as linear time. But like, for example, if I'm at E4 right now, it looks like it kind of a reality or time. It works as a double cone system, almost like a toroid when you're in the central point. And so, because once you're in the center point, you can expand as a cone forward, like to the left, to the right, forward. But you can also move up, down, and you can also navigate backwards if you can convince yourself to do that. But I will say that's a very trippy thing to do. and it seems to be that relative to your starting point, your present point, that what's in front of you to the left and right in that forward position is what we regard as things that can be changed by decision. You know, cleaning up your room or washing a mug, something like that. Whereas things in a vertical axis of time, I know in this model it shows how it's immediately different colors. And I want to represent that as densities, but there does seem to be, like, let's just say, a near infinite amount of red layers before you move to the orange layer. And what that represents is the universe and density that we're presently in. If you're moving vertically, you're moving to world lines where decisions aren't sufficient for those changes. Like, for example, you know, or present decisions cannot change this fast enough. So for example, I could move vertically in time and this wall would be orange, where it's retroactively changing the decisions I made.
What if you move vertically and then you decide to paint your wall green when you get back?
I mean, that would just be moving forward and back, or forward as normal. The vertical shifting is changing decisions that would have already had to take in place.
Whoa. So that's where it gets into time travel.
Yeah.
And if you shift vertically, you're going forward, down, or low. If you want, below you would be backwards in that way, orientation wise.
I don't know how that works right now. It seems to be that the vertical is just different decisions that would have been made in the past. But you can actually move to the past by just, well, effectively walking backwards through time.
Right.
Which would be, you know, like basically shifting your velocity to then be moving positive light speed, but then that also doesn't work exactly because then that's when you get into this space of what can be called as 3D time or time space. And so I'm curious about the mathematics as well, with how you navigate backwards.
And do you think that there's a technology that facilitates that sort of travel, this faster than light travel, which would then get us out of this, or get you out of this physical 3D reality, to where then you could transcend, you can go to any decision made and, you know, time travel essentially? Or do you think it's consciousness, or do you think a little mix of both, or either, well, or maybe?
Well, you can do it through your DNA.
So talk to me about that.
Well, the DNA is overlooked a lot. I've been starting to do some research on that, specifically on Austriana's Dean's work. She has two books published, Voyagers, Volume 1 and 2. A lot of detailed work, very trippy, but she goes into the DNA, and more or less, the DNA is the Boolean logic that the universe uses to manifest ourselves. And so it has to house a coherent connection to our soul. So then that means it's embedded outside of what we regard as physical space as well.
How did you come to learn this stuff? Does it come easy for you to visualize these things and just go, oh, I see how this works? And like, do you have the beautiful mind math going on in your head all the time? Because you seem to just be able to just see and get this and grasp this. And then also explain it in a way where it's very highly technical, but we're getting what you're saying. It's fascinating, dude. It's very cool.
Well, I appreciate that comment, but on the visualization, no, I'm actually in the minority that can't visualize things under normal circumstances. It's black, completely black in my mind.
So I'm sort of the same way. Whenever I close my eyes, like nothing's there, right? I'll get like these, I want to say neon streams of light, but they're very, very faint. And it's almost like I'm willing myself to have them. Is that something you have as well? But they don't really shape or form into anything. They're just sort of...
I've been learning how to shape and form them into things. And one of my very recent ideas on why some people can see colors and why some people can't is I believe it talks to your natural embeddedness into the ether field. And so if you're very embedded into it, your visualization is weak until you become more spiritually attuned and things like that. Because when you visualize things, you're directly manifesting them into space-time.
Okay, and so we're just spiritually anchored to this place too much to visualize well enough to manifest our way out of it?
Well, no, it's that we're so well embedded that it's a limitation that we gave ourselves. So we won't fuck things up due to our ignorance.
This is interesting. This is, I love the way you find that, dude. That's brilliant. Because then, yeah, that's a little bit more, it's like taking a psychedelic knowing that it's going to make you not trip. You know what I mean? It's sort of a filter that you voluntarily put on yourself, your consciousness, like weighted blankets, so that it dials you down to a level so that you can do something, right? You know, if you need to do something under the water, you got to go down there. So it just seems like this idea of suiting up to come here perturbs the filter of all of these exceptional qualities we have to like teleport and shit. Now, do you think that's a permanent thing, or do you think we only chose that for a little while and that maybe we can unlock the teleportation and shit like that?
Well, you can definitely unlock it because everything is just driven by your belief. And well, I'll get into that a little bit moment here. I want to close
Fair
this
enough.
Up.
Yeah.
So the big thing with the 3D time, all that I want to share, I think is very useful for manifestation, is we can say, you know, what no matter what point you're in, let's just say you're starting at A1 and you want to manifest winning the lottery. Well, with your current belief paradigm, if you basically are stagnant in your decision, this is the other thing too, is it's a natural process for us to be moving across world lines. And I believe I've pinpointed the refresh rate because of some information I've come across. It seems to be roughly 4 times a second when we move, how often we transition frames. And then whether you transition.
What do you mean by transition frame? Do you mean like timeline shift and all that? Or do you mean a present moment shifts every 4 seconds?
Well, basically, like, there's a couple ideas I have with it. But for example, like perhaps these aren't actually Planck units of time, but these are about one quarter of a second. So you move from A1 to A2 after about 0.22 seconds. And so then whether you move, say, in world line A or move to world line B is entirely up to you. If you make a decision, like basically you can think, if you never made another decision in your life and you just sat still, you'd stay in the same world line until you die. But each decision you make transitions you to a different world line, especially if it counteracts previous lines of thinking. And so what you can do, and so I was like with the intuition ideas, like that's why, like if you're expanded, you might be sensing something from a world line 7 columns over as a possibility. And so that can be some reason for why anxieties can seem so truthful and things like that.
Or an inspiration. It's pulling you from a few lines over saying, hey, if you start your book now, you know, this would be a pretty cool life, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that too. And so if you're trying to focus on a particular goal, then what you can do is like, we can say something like Z25, or we're in A1 right now. You walk yourself onto that, and you, if you can know how to shut off your cognitive overlay of really just thinking, then your consciousness will naturally pull you to there. If you can believe you're in that moment, and then you surrender your body to that sensation, and you'll just start knowing how to do the different actions to pull you there. And so it might, you know, maybe it might be some silly things like where you walk around in a circle around your neighborhood 17 times every third Thursday of the month for a year. It can be really silly things like that, but really I wouldn't even consider those silly because it's convincing yourself that this will work. And whatever you can convince yourself to believe, given a sufficient amount of time, it will occur.
Okay, so are you saying that a menial activity, we can focus on a menial activity and then shifting timelines and that will shift us into a new timeline? Is that what you're talking about?
If you believe it, yes. It's whatever you believe will work, but you have to believe it to your core.
Hmm. So we're... Okay, so this shifts it completely out of like this victim mentality. We're in sort of an Archon Hell realm that's being thrown at us and puts the power into your mind. Or do you think we're also in a hell realm with Archons and shit that's The power is still in your mind.
We're 100% in an Archon hell realm. And so how I view Archons is they're embedded in the membrane of our space-time reality. And what happens is our souls, they more or less function as light, and the Archons function as prisms. And so when we enter into this membrane, our soul gets refracted by the prisms of the Archons. However, the rule that they have to follow is they have to follow the soul's narrative. And so, sometimes you may have noticed that there's been certain like key points in your life which seem like they are bound to happen no matter what. And that's because your soul set up as a key point. But then what happens, I want to make sure I can condense this as much as possible. So the step-by-step process for like the soul manifesting into the physical body, at least from a narrative standpoint, you can do it more technically with like biophysiology, with RNA and DNA and microtubules and all that stuff. But from a narrative standpoint, it's your soul's narrative filters into a local matrix, which we'll regard as our universe right now, which is where the Archons are embedded into the membrane. And our soul has a narrative. The narrative is then deciphered by the local space-time matrix and space-time coordinates, which are compatible with that narrative, are then determined, and our soul manifests itself as our physical body. And then as our body manifests, it manifests the brain, which then manifests the local frame consciousness. And then the local frame consciousness, which is basically just your perceptions of the present moment and however much you expand it, is then it then feeds back the environmental information to the soul so then it can keep updating the narrative and making sure that exploring the correct narrative. So there's two ways you can go about reprogramming the reality. Option one, which I consider generally easier, is emotions. Just pure emotions. Don't worry about details. Don't worry about whether it's probable or likely to happen. Just lock yourself into the moment that you want. Believe it fully to your core. Because what other thing I noticed is that the magnitude of emotions doesn't matter. It's whether the emotions exist or not. And so even if there's a little atom of doubt somewhere deep, deep inside of your mind, that's going to inhibit you. You have to flush that out. But there's a couple of things you can do. So you can walk into the emotional coordinates to then basically guide your soul's narrative into the space-time coordinates that you want to manifest into. Or if you start learning the geometries and the more advanced physics, which they keep hidden from us, and some of the esotericism, with some of the Vedic information and Buddhist information, where they go into different geometries and plasma navigation. If you start learning exactly the rules of our reality, then you can actually basically just tell the Archons how to manifest. Well, really what you're doing is you're telling your soul the exact geometries to utilize inside this reality so they can override any impairment that the Archons wish to impose because there's no monkey paw effect, because there's no room for interpretation.
So it really is up to this Cheshire Cat line in Alice in Wonderland where he says, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And so it's sort of this idea of being a rudderless boat in an ocean that's just going to get cast about until you fashion a rudder and say, I want to go that way, and just make those decisions consciously. And then mm-hmm. it seems like, yeah, these Archons or these negative things just leave you alone, as it seems, right? Because now they don't need to push you in a direction, which is any direction they want. Is that sort of what you're talking about?
No, they don't leave you alone. They get angrier the more you resist them. And so the trick is learning how to suppress them from even being able to enter your consciousness field. And with the prism idea, what it seems like is they have, a measurable amount of time before they filter the information from the soul's consciousness into the reality. And so if you can move fast enough, which is basically train your intuition or your soul connection, your soul heart connection, then you can bypass them even being able to alter your mind on any level. Because what they functionally do is they sit at the precipice of your mind, the membrane of your mind, and they start imposing all these nasty thoughts.
Totally. So how do you prevent against that?
You just learn how to. Describing how to is a very tricky thing. And I'm not sure if I would know how to describe that. I just know that I've done it. And the biggest thing is just give them less attention.
Fair enough. Do you have a lesson? Because I've been, I actually started doing this 2 days ago, dude. It's so interesting. You and I are talking right now. There's a technique that I had 2 days ago about leaves, but tell me, do you have a technique when these intrusive thoughts come in?
It's really just, it differs entirely by the given moment. For a while, when I was first working on getting, like, hold on my emotional coherency, I would just, you know, push myself to focus on myself, the present moment, and what I have controlled. And there's this one song by Kira the Dawn. Have you ever heard of him?
I have not, but I will check it out.
So he's a cool guy. What he does is he remixes different speeches and lectures into, like, motivational music.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I like that.
And I think it was by Terrence McKenna. But there's this one song where it's Don't Worry, and basically just going over the idea, like, you don't know enough to worry. And also, technically speaking, worrying is worshiping the devil because it's the inverse of prayer.
Damn. Yeah. I mean, that's a great way to look at it, just on a positive level, on any kind of level. Emotos work with water. That's a beautiful way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for me, what really worked is just, I guess, teaching myself how stupid it was to give these things attention and energy, but also allowing the grace and patience for not knowing how to navigate outside of their control sooner.
Ooh. That surrender, dude. You've got, like, the best definitions for this shit. You have the best example of why manifestation could be plausible and work. I mean, this is how it should be taught, honestly. It's because it's so pragmatic. It makes sense. It ties in with all the stuff that we're talking about. So recently mine has been like, okay, have you ever heard Alan Watts talk about thoughts coming in and that you just watch them float by like leaves on a river? Have you ever heard that?
No, I've heard Carl Jung's idea about how you walk into a room and the thoughts, like, the furniture already there.
Oh, that's interesting. Ooh, I like that one as well. Okay, well, I grabbed the leaf idea worked because I was on a walk and I was thinking about this because I had a couple of thoughts come in and I was like, you're not mine and I know you're not. And I recognize the shit out of it. But you move past sort of the why do I think this way and oh my God, and take this personal responsibility with it. We've shunned that long ago. But now it's sort of how do you dance with it? How do you manage it? If it's going to be part of you, it's in your skull, right? And it's as a mental realm attempting to coax or inspire emotion out of you in some way. And there's something interesting I want to talk to you about in the afterthought, actually, about that. So with that then, though, you're talking about a system that now is with you all the time. With this, I had an intrusive thought come in, and again, I was walking outside, and so I thought about the leaves thing, and I thought, what if when that intrusive thought comes in, rather than it, like, how I pictured it was leaves falling out of a tree, okay, and that's what the thoughts were to me in that moment, were just leaves falling out of a tree, and they're, like, hitting you, they're in your mind, but if you can take that intrusive one and grab it, and, like, look at it, it's got a little symbol of the thought on it, or it's got the thought written on it or something like that. And you can grab it. And what I'm doing now is placing them in an imaginary river and watching them walk, like, float away. Right. And so it's been a mental exercise that I've been playing with lately, and I'll have a thought, dude, and I will physically go and fucking set it in an imaginary body of water and let it wash away. So do you think this is a good technique for shifting timelines? Am I going to kind of, because the Archons, you know, seem to keep coming, but they're not as strong, if that makes sense. There seems to be a weakness in the repetitive thoughts coming in.
Yeah, well, I'll comment on that in a moment here. I do think it's a good technique, and really just anything that gives you control over which thoughts into your mind and dismissing the emotional energy towards ones you don't care for. Any technique that you want to utilize is very good. So that's a very good one. One that I utilized for a while, and I actually just popped my mind for the first time using like 8 months, but as if I have a thought pop in my mind, and because sometimes it's like, I know this is a reasonable thought, but it's like, I don't like it, so I want to get rid of it, is either physically or mentally, but do it physically because it's fun, is get like a note card, piece of paper, write down the thought, and then take a lighter and physically burn it.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
And it's like, and so in the same vein, I just say, I don't think like keeping historic diaries or journals of negative experiences is necessarily a good thing. There's utility in it, especially if you want to share with other people to learn. However, if it's just for personal logging, so you can remember, like, you know, negative things you went through, make sure you won't regret it. But also, if you can bring yourself to burn it, I think that's a very good thing too.
Yeah, like go ahead and write in your daily journal that you are going to keep bound together. What would be a code for this? Like, got to have a bonfire today, you know, and that could be your code for I wrote something else down on a piece of paper and burned it instead of put it here. And then you take your experience, write it all down in another piece of paper, not in the journal you're going to keep. And so you reference it alchemically in the one that you do keep, and then you burn the damn thing so that you can get it out. I like that.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. So like, part of one line is what you're doing technically is you're unsubscribing or you're removing your allocation of acceptance for thought patterns which no longer serve your timeline trajectory.
I love this, the unsubscribing from it. That's exactly what I've thought. I'm like, no, I'm unsubscribing from this. This has been a pattern. I see it. I'm outside the loop. Let's cut it out. Brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did want to go over because you're asking like how I got like better at the terminology. Really what it was is probably, I guess, two big factors. One is autism. And then learning psychology, it was more so like self-discovery because there's some very poor social experiences I had with abolishment of some friends turning the back on me, things like that. Nothing I want to say too dramatic, but very in the personal experience it was. And so to get through that, I would just go on walks, sometimes multiple hours a day, and I would just start addressing thoughts in my mind. And I wouldn't ever allow myself to just dismiss something. Even no matter how much it bothered me or whatever, I would make sure that I could describe it accurately so that I could reference it again at another point with no overlap to other topics. So it was a mix of that and just wanting to get good at analogies. And then I think training your mind to work with analogies is one of the best, I guess, pre-techniques you can do for learning topics quickly.
Give me an example. Go on.
I can't think of a very precise example, but I'm sure like throughout where I've been talking is I've been overlaying geometries with psychology, with emotions and music at times.
Perfect. And
because I know for a while, like it was something I had to work on for a long time, but eventually it just started clicking. It's like I just navigate my mind and the thought patterns would generate.
Yes, I get it. Okay. I mean, what a fascinating perspective you have. So what do you think of like the matrix, I suppose, the world, the politics, education, religion, all that kind of stuff? What do you think of those elements in our reality?
Like what about them?
Yeah. How do you feel about them? Do you think that they're altruistic? Do you think that they're very heavily Archon influenced and that like Satan's
very heavily, very heavily Archon influenced? On that Satan question, I do want to address that. I believe Satan is a mythological combination, like a mass combination of a plethora of entities, including the Archons. And so Satan is just kind of this, you know, umbrella term that we came up with to describe this dark energy. But it's really a collection of these entities which impose this dark energy, like the Elohim, the Archons, to some extent. The Archangel Michael Collective, because he apparently was causing issues with us for a while. And then Nephilim, and then also, you know, with the risk of being controversial, is specifically the Vedic being Ganesha, the elephant headed guy.
Ooh, fucking break it apart, dude. What's your beef with Ganesh? Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say, because I know that some people who are listening to this, they might work with him or pray to him or things like that. What I would want to propose is rather than giving him the name Ganesha or Ganapati, to refer to him by the name of Ganapata and see what you infer from there. Through my personal experiences, that seems to be his actual name. And what a lot of these entities will do is nowhere written down will you find their actual name, because what you do by that is you move past their facade directly. And so any disinformation, any lies or manipulation they're posing upon you, it's like you're doing a soul read. They can't hide from you anymore. And so if you can figure out how to find the true names, you can start literally just, you can think their name, you can say their name, and immediately you can get a feel for them.
Dude, this is something I've been talking about. Question what's communicating with you, right? Because people get kind of, you know, I guess I can get it that you get wrapped up in whatever because it's giving you attention. And, oh, it's got wings and it glows and there's a bright light and it fades through my wall and it took me on a ride and it's craft. And yeah, but back up, man. You know, What's its deal? You know, what's its name? What's its relationship to you? You know, is it beneficial? And I think a lot of times too, that you can be convinced that something is super dope when it's not, you know what I mean? And so you sort of get this Stockholm syndrome with these people who are like, no, I love this. I can't wait until I get abducted again, or I can't wait because it's not demons. Yeah, it does smell like farts and rotten eggs every time they leave, but it's not demons. It's other spacecraft works, everybody. It's just interesting to think about the relationship to these entities. So what is it? Are we food for them? Is the fear or the reaction emotionally that we produce food for them? Or is it just sort of like parasitic in nature? Meaning if you're moving around, you've got one on you, kind of a thing. It's just like you said, part of the reality, right?
Well, so specifically it's sound design. So the Archons are the only ones which follow that rule. They're the only ones that are embedded in the space-time. So then by some extent, the Demiurge, but I'm not sure how placed the Demiurge, and allegedly, or the Gnostic narrative is that the Demiurge create this imperfect reality and then create the Archons to rule over it.
I see.
I haven't had any experiences with the Demiurge, so I don't have any comics on it in particular. In regards to these other things, pretty much psychology is literally universal. It's not human psychology, it's psychology. And so with a lot of these beings, it's as simple as like an ego power trip. And a lot of them are just so pathetic, because as soon as you're aware of what they're doing, if you just hold your focus, it completely disrupts their entire existence. Like there's an experience I had with the Egyptian serpent goddess. What was her name that she goes by? Like Apephis. Because there was a meditation that I did during the solar eclipse, because I saw that at 3:33 p.m. Eastern time, NASA is going to be launching a rocket into the ionosphere hole to measure the radio wave interference. But the code name they gave it was Apephis, to represent the Egyptian serpent goddess of chaos.
Didn't they launch three that day? And then that was one at 3:33 though, right?
Mm-hmm.
God, yeah, dude.
I think it was 3:03, 3:33, and 4:03 p.m. Eastern time.
Dude.
And so I had some experiences with her, and there was some weird, wacky things, because it looked like she was trying to feast on the sun. Like, that's wholeheartedly what I saw when I was like in that meditative state with the solar eclipse glasses on. Is it really looked like this giant cosmic snake with its fangs latched into the sun. And so many weird things, interesting things happened there. Because I didn't even think about what's going on before, but I just walked in and I was just focusing, like, son, I'm going to protect you for this hour because you help us out a lot all the time. So I got your back this time. And she was just getting pissed off at me. I could see all these little red eyes of serpents staring at me, trying to derail my focus. And I was just staring down. I was pissing her off more and more and more. And just all this intuitive, like, historic knowledge was streaming into my consciousness, like how her influence is what caused the fall of Egypt into practicing black magic, and eventually the fall of the civilization, which John Lowe Mekeldesiak talks a little bit about in his books, Ancient Secret of the Flower of Life. I've heard reference in a few other places, books are written by people allegedly in the Light Society, which is like the inverse of the Illuminati. But it was interesting too, because during that information, like, I was just walking into her, and there was a moment where I saw another frame. It really looked like you have two windows on a monitor, and another frame of a sun tried overlaying over the sun I was focusing on, and it like glitched out because it couldn't break my focus, and so it just disappeared. And what's so interesting around that time is my father, he wasn't an atheist or anything like that. And he was just looking at the solar eclipse occasionally. And there was a handful of times where when he looked up with his glasses on, he took his eyes to a moment to focus on one of two suns.
Dude, well, this second sun's an idea that Crow 777's been talking about. So do you think that there's a second sun up there, and that maybe that snake goddess is really hiding it?
I think there could be, but I think specifically the phenomenon that I experienced was them trying to impose a worldwide traversal onto us.
Gotcha, more metaphoric. Okay, because what you describe with that snake with the fangs around the ball, which would be the sun, is also described in this tissue salts. Yes, I think we're going to keep track. You guys, it's a game now. Keep track of how many times I mention it and how many running episodes. But the tissue salts diagram has this Ouroboros on top because it's representative of the snake that goes around, that eats its own tail, but it's also symbolic of the sun and time, right? And then sort of this loop that we're all stuck in, air quotes here, in this density, if that's what this is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the Ouroboros is a very interesting symbol, because one thing it does very good metaphorically is it describes the function of the archons very well. Because what they focus on doing is, rather than harnessing focus and coherency, is they work on creating a dissonant reality as, but then at the way that they're actually able to apply energy to it, because they don't have a coherent connection with source like we do. And so what they do is they're feeding off our emotional fluctuations, which are like creative energy, and they use that as fuel to keep creating this dissonant reality.
That's that we keep ourselves, air quotes, stuck in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they gaslight us and convince us that we can't do anything else. And so then it's interesting, because one of the things that I did, because you were mentioning earlier how it seems like the archons are a bit weaker, sometime in December, I have to be a little bit scarce on precise details with things, but there's an experience I had when I was working on my detachment from Ganesha, or whatever you want to call it, and then one of these archons started imposing on me a lot, and I also started tapping into elemental energy as well, which was very interesting. And as elemental energy in particular, it's good at burning basically the dissonant energy, the goo, G-U, or black goo, as is referenced by the Galactics and more of the alien people. It's archonic in nature. What it is exactly is a little bit trickier to describe, but it's destructive. And so anger creates it, depression creates it. Anything that you could consider dissonant when it comes to emotion is an aspect of this goo, or the goo is an aspect of it. And what they were doing with, like, how their imposition on our mind manifested in the ether field is it was just dousing the entire ether field in this goo to decrease the viscosity of it, to make it more like molasses and more like water. More like molasses, less like water. And one of the things I did, because there's one archon in particular, it seems to be at least seven. It may be 12, there may be a multiple of 12, but I know it's at least seven. I closed one off in this elemental energy that I got in touch with, and it couldn't leave it because it burned any of the dissonant energy. And so it made it so that the only way they could actually leave it is if it itself became coherent. And so that thing was trapped there for about 7 months while the rest of the ether field was getting cleaned up. And there's weird things too on a few key dates, including the morning after I closed this portal that was being worked on to allow the archons more power, is the following day, there are these waves of like thick, foggy clouds moving in from all directions to the house I was at.
Dude. So what do you think you're working with when you call in the power to close these portals and stuff like that? Do you think it could be an archon in disguise?
So it could be. I'm never going to discount anything until I interact with it tangibly, but I have absolutely no reason to suspect that. I also want to say, though, that archons aren't inherently bad. There's Gnostic text that talks about Yeshua, or the man that Jesus Christ is based off of, being an archon himself. And basically he got sick and tired of his brethren manipulating humanity. And so he stepped up to show people how to disconnect from their imposition.
Interesting. Like Prometheus wanting to give us fire, or Enlil and Enki, you know, that battle for humanity and one feeling bad for us. It's like somebody going into an animal kill shelter and just letting all the animals out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the archons, even though they are way out of line, they are also the thing which gives us a sense of identity and ego.
So it sounds like, I mean, they're part of this reality. And mm-hmm. So why do you think we are here? Is this a punishment, or do you think we're here to fix it? Or do you think we're here just as a vacation? We're just experiencing it kind of like a ride?
I won't ever consider it a punishment. I would consider it could be any of the other things. It could be to fix it, could be to experience, it could be just, you know, going along with the ride, like you said. But like the fact that it feels like a punishment is the issue, because that should never be part of existence, ever. If you're not hurting other people directly on a conscious level, you should not be punished for it. And that's what the archons are imposing on us, which is completely out of line, but it's a consequence of free will, as everything can happen. And so there's a lot of things said, because then there's all these different non-human entities which are fixing on us. And what was really interesting is when I was working on dispelling the Archon, which then also burned up the goo in the ether, which, by the way, the process that I initiate finished on July 21st in particular. But it's very fascinating because within a week after I closed the portal, I started noticing people around me were being much more creative, more emotionally coherent, more emotionally stable, so on and so forth. And it seemed like life wasn't beating people up anymore as much.
I could say about July 21st, I had a big change, man. I had a big purge. I had a big, like, vomit poop fest thing, too, which was interesting. But I really, yeah, feel better. So thank you, Devin, for closing that portal and getting the Archons to just chill out for a little bit. At least caging that other one up, you know, giving them a little taste, saying, like, hey, you got to become coherent until you get out of there. That'd be a great thing. It's just sort of taste of own medicine kind of thing. If you want to go just like us, the only way out is through. Box them all up. Let us fucking clean this place up a little bit. And move on, man, you know? But because they're part of the reality, they have a limited amount of power here, meaning they can whisper in your ear. You have the decision to, air quotes, get out, and free will. I mean, I kind of think free will is interesting, because then what are we talking about there? Are you talking about the free will to affect change from where you are now, or the free will to live in a place where you have actual free will, what you would call free will, and where this stuff doesn't exist, right? The things that we would disagree with here, the Archon influence, for instance, that is going against my understanding of free will, because I don't want it here. So if it's here and I have the free will not, you see what I'm saying? So do you think that it's just the free will to sort of deal with what's in front of you and make choices based off of that, not necessarily on a realm level?
No, it's both. There's different levels of it. And so, like, while we're choosing to be our bodies right now, because that's one of the other things, we're choosing to be our bodies every given moment. We can weave it, but like I had our bar experience a couple of months ago, and I wanted to come back here. It's like, I could have gone anywhere in time and space that I wanted to. It's like, fuck that. I like my life right now. This is comfortable. It's fun. I came here to play video games and learn theoretical physics. I'm not going to stop that journey yet.
Why can't you just create a physical reality on the other side somewhere with all the things you like here, but minus the cancer and child rape and fleas and shit like that? Like, why can't we just do that to where you can play video games all day in a reality based on the things that you learned here? Do you think that that's possible?
I mean, it's definitely possible, but there do have to be some limitations because we're living in a collective. So if you're living in a collective, then it's like, you know, you could program any computer program that you want to right now. You could program so that you're playing in a world where you can fly and breathe underwater and things like that. However, unless you get other people to agree to incarnate into that video game or make an account, whatever, you're just going to be by yourself. And so it's like, sure, you can make a game that you like more than, you know, World of Warcraft. However, maybe you like all the people in World of Warcraft, and so you choose a lesser experience because of the quality of people.
Yeah, this is kind of my thought on it, too, is that this is one of our games. Like, one of us made this place, and we're all just sort of in here kind of playing the game with each other. Do you mm-hmm. think that maybe that could be what's going on?
Oh, yeah, I think that's very close to being exactly what's going on. But in the whole, when you start getting to Stargate systems and how the multiversal lie structure works, that's when things start to get a little interesting, because then there are these malevolent entities like the Draconians, like the Archons, so on and so forth, who they just want to cause chaos because, you know, that's what they choose to do. Apparently what they're actually doing is they're, roughly speaking, they're reading their DNA backwards.
But it seems like they're supposed to, does it seem to you like they're supposed to do that? Because what it creates in us is the ability to look at that and go, no, thank you. And to really grow and to challenge ourselves. And that's how we transcend, is in this fuck around and find out universe. And it seems like we're like, yeah, if we knew everything, then we wouldn't have the experience, which I don't disagree with. But then also you say, well, then how would you motivate the experience, right? You would need a system in place to run that. You would need something here that's sort of a janitory fog that just runs around and cleans stuff up, and it manifests in front of people as Bigfoot every now and then to kind of give them a little shake and redirect their life, and causes the car wreck that ends them up in the river but keeps their head above water so that they can have a near-death experience and then come back and say this place is fantastic. You know, it seems like a Westworld type experience when we start talking about all these exceptional phenomena here that seem very subjective to each individual person, even if multiple experience it at the same time. It's a fascinating realm when we talk about this, and especially the way you describe things, man. It's just, it's such an interesting mix of the science and the spiritual, and it's deep on both sides, which is just, it's amazing, dude. It's really remarkable. Do you want to cover the 37 stuff, or do you want to do that in the afterthought?
I'd be happy to cover or some of that now. I was trying to think of it, because there was a lot you said right there.
Oh, I say a lot. Did you want to say something to that?
I think so. Just I was processing. You know, because like the whole near infinite possibilities is what makes everything so trippy to really think about. And that's the weird thing, because the way that we think about physics and spiritual right now is basically everything within side of the multiversal system. And so we're not even getting past the layer of the soul yet. And so we have such limited information. So one of my philosophies with learning about things has been largely just to focus on the immediately applicable and necessary information, which is largely bound to what's inside of this physical reality, which then includes 3D timing, though that's not technically what we regard as physical. But however, because with like some of the traumatic experiences you were talking about, what makes the most sense for them is they seem to occur when people are not following their soul. And so the soul is like, sorry, guy, you gotta wake up. You're getting a little bit off schedule. So it's going to be scary. It's going to spook you a little bit, but I'm not sure how else to get you to actually open your eyes to this.
Well, that's the thing. What it feels like is that you're in a maze, but all the lights are off. And so you're walking forward and you bump into shit, or you're in a hall of mirrors and you see something and you're like, oh, I can go that way. And then you're like, smack. No, it's a mirror and everything's inverted. It feels like. And so part of the, you know, navigation of the game is learning how to navigate the game, right?
Yeah, I mean, because like the big thing, how you learn how to do that is you just got to start thinking through your heart rather than your brain.
This shit. Tell me, okay, so this is one that I really have a tough time wrapping my brain around because I'm not thinking with my heart, but describe this to me. What do you mean when you say think with your heart?
The way I learned is somebody taught me like the simple mantra emotion where you touch your third eye and then your heart and you say, I command my mind to think through my heart. I command my mind to think through my heart. I command my mind to think through my heart. And for me, it manifests as kind of a, almost like a butterfly type feeling, that type of tingle, but centralized in my heart. And that feels like thoughts move more freely. It doesn't feel like there's as much imposition. It was very faint at first, but it's like, wait a second. It's like, why does my intuition feel like it's amplified? Why does everything feel more correct? And so I just started focusing on it for a while. And a lot of times when I'm in my thought experiments, I'll just centralize all my intent into my heart and have the thought experiments manifest through there. Because then it's a better filter for truth. There's not nearly as many entities actually trying to impose through you, because what working through the heart does is it kind of mandates it be a coherent frequency for information to bypass it.
It's like looking at the world through a certain color lens, and you just switch it from that red lens to the blue lens, and you start seeing things in a different light. Okay, well, let's do it together. If it's just three times and it's that simple, do you mind walking us through this? Everybody, where you are, if you're driving, you know, do this carefully, because a lot of the butterflies are to follow here. So it's, do you mind walking us through this?
Absolutely. And everyone says it's multiples of three times. And so for some people, three times may be sufficient. Other people may need to do it 15 times before they feel anything.
Okay, multiples of three, gang. We're going to do, let's do three for everybody here, because I think this is awesome. This is actionable. Let's go. Okay, so.
So you place your fingers where it feels right. I usually do my index and middle finger to my third eye location right between the brow. And I say, I command my mind. And as I'm, and after I say those, I start moving my hand down to the central heart chakra to think with my heart. And I repeat the motion with each repetition of the phrase. I command my mind to think through my heart. I command my mind to think through my heart. I command my mind to think through my heart.
Command my mind to think through my heart. Okay, that's amazing. Okay, I'm gonna practice
for
this
for you. Do it two more times, because you did it four. Do it six times then.
Oh, okay. Well, I missed the first one. That's why I didn't. I did the action, but not the words. Does
that
count?
That still counts. Yeah, it counts.
Oh, okay. It still counts. Okay. I command my mind to think with my heart. I command my mind to think with my heart.
It's through your heart, not with
through.
My heart.
Okay. Yeah. I command my mind to think through my heart. I command my mind to think through my heart. Great delineation. I'm glad I misspoke. So you could point that out. Command my mind to think through my heart. I command my mind to think through my heart. I command my mind to think through my heart. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, because the night
it's like
is
an obsessive compulsive thing. It's like ESA Beetlejuice. I get it. Absolutely fascinating, dude. Well, I'll tell you what, let's wrap it up on this one, and then let's get into the 37 and some other things in the afterthought. I just want to remind everybody that all the ways to find you located down below. There's also a great plug for the Zed talks that you guys do. What is it? Every other Friday. And if you sign up for Zed's Patreon, I believe you get into that. So definitely a plug for his stuff. And I'm just going to link it down below because I love Dave, and it's a wonderful thing. And I'm grateful. The ones that we can catch, I'm just like, God, this is just fascinating. And Chip's in there, and you guys have just the, and GH, is that his name?
GW.
GW, thank you. I knew it was. All right. No disrespect, G-dubs.
Yeah, and with both the email and Instagram link, is I have those accounts up specifically for this type of information. So if people want to shoot me a message about anything, you're more than welcome to.
Perfect. I love that, man. All right, before we get into the afterthought, brother, which again, guys, great way to support the show. The link for that Patreon is down in the show description. Yeah, it's where you get access to all the stuff and the hangouts and things like that. So before we let you run here, Bubba, and get to that afterthought, what is something that gets you out of bed every day, man?
Ooh, that's a good question. Let me think about that for a moment here. I guess really it's curiosity for me. Definitely like some of the experiences I've had, which I've been very blissful with different like hyper consciousness meditations, like imposing intent, that type of stuff, like working more with an actual state of meditation rather than passive. And these other experiences I've had, like lucid dreaming within my body, when I had that one experience with the serpent goddesses, I love these experiences so much. And so learning how to be more stable and be able to work with them more and have them more frequently is like, I don't have to think about it, it just drives me by itself. And so that drives me to learn more about the theoretical physics, because I eventually want to be, you know, applying that to electrical and mechanical engineering, and then the emotional coherency so that I can enter those states more easily, not being in those states all the time, and start seeing these things more and more. Because when you have these heightened senses, like everything just, you start raising yourself above the archons, and everything is just so innate and beautiful. I'm so grateful for everything. It's like when I left my body, when I came back, even just how intense the floor felt. It felt beautiful. Just my feet on the wooden floor. It was just the most amazing thing.
Just want to take a moment here and thank that amazing young man, Devin Winter, for coming by and absolutely blowing minds. His email, his Instagram, and all the other ways to find him located down in the show description, as well as check out Dave's Patreon. He has a wonderful Patreon over there where they are doing the Zed Talks. Absolutely fascinating. This is how I met Devin, actually. So join that link down in the show description, as well as our link to support your favorite show, the one you're listening to here. That's where you can get access to all the afterthoughts, the hangouts, and this afterthought. We go really balls deep into information hazard. Guys, if you thought the episode was awesome, check this afterthought out. Now, I just want to remind everybody to go out into this wild-ass realm as it gets wilder, and of course, pick up a piece of litter. Be nice to everybody you come across. Get the fuck out of the left-hand lane. And of course, above anything else, go out into this weird, fucking wild, fucking whatever the fuck realm. And y'all just be good to one another. Thank you so much for watching, listening, subscribing, and doing all the things that are important to folks like me doing this thing. We will see you next time.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that American Family Insurance agents can help build a customized renter's policy so you can protect stuff like this, or this, or even this. Case in point. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.